Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. Irish eyes are smiling this week. Now, because I have some people named Murphy in my family tree, I thought I'd better join in the celebration. In this program, you will hear about Mark Pollock, a very brave explorer who later became an influential activist for spinal cord injuries. You'll also hear about a few intrepid Irish guide dogs. But first, though, it's all about Mark Pollock. This information came from Wikipedia, and it starts out telling you that he was born on February 29th in 1976. He is an international motivational speaker, explorer, and author from Northern Ireland. He became the first blind man to race to the South Pole. As part of a three-man team called the South Pole Flag, along with Simon O'Donnell and Inge Solheim, he took 43 days in January of 2009 to complete the Amundsen Omega 3 South Pole race. Mark Pollock asserted his disability had slowed him down, but they finished fifth overall from the six teams that finished the race. He had participated against nine other teams, including that of BBC personality Ben Fogle, and the Olympic gold medalist James Cracknell, who was a friend of Pollock. He's an avid rower. Pollock has won the bronze and silver medals at the 2002 Commonwealth Rowing Champions that were held in Nottingham, England. That was a little bit of background for you. Now we have go to some more details. Pollock was born to Barbara and Johnny Pollock in Holywood, County Down in Northern Ireland. That's near Belfast. When Mark was five, he lost the sight of his right eye and was forced during the remainder of his childhood to avoid contact team sports to preserve the vision in his left eye. He was educated at the Royal Belfast Academical Institution, where he was a keen rower. He later went on to study business and economics at Trinity College in Dublin, where he became a champion school rower and captain of the university's rowing club. But at age 22, he lost the sight in his left eye and was, at that point, suddenly blind. In 2010, just weeks before his wedding, Pollock fell from an upstairs window, breaking his back and fracturing his skull. This caused bleeding on the brain and resulted in paralysis. And next, we have even more details. First of all, here's a quote on his search for independence. He said, "I just wanted to be independent again. I started to get the tools that might help me, my computer, my speaking clock, my watch, Larry, my guide dog." Pollock had been blind since the age of 22 when his left retina became detached. This had a devastating effect on him, as he believed at the time that blind people could not have a life which he perceived as normal, that they could not participate in sports, work, study, socializing, or dating. Before his operation, he had been about to embark on a city job in London, but after, it was left with no option but to return home to his mother. Next, I have a quote from Mark about his search for employment. He said, "They didn't know how to cope with a blind person, and I couldn't tell them how it might work, because I've never worked as a blind person. It was a catch-22. So Pollock enrolled in a course to help come to terms with his disability. He left for Dublin with his guide dog, Larry, and began putting himself forward for job interviews. Prospective employers were uncertain as to how to approach him. Eventually, the father of one of his college friends assigned him to organizing corporate entertainment. He returned to rowing, and he won the bronze and silver medals for Northern Ireland in the 2002 Commonwealth Rowing Championships. He engaged in other athletic pursuits, including running six marathons in 7 days with a sighted partner across the Gobi Desert in China in 2003. This is when he raised tens of thousands of euro for the charity called Sightsavers International. On the 10th of April in 2004, he competed in the North Pole Marathon on the sixth anniversary of his blindness. To mark the 10th anniversary of his blindness, Pollock explored the challenge of racing to the South Pole. Uncertain over whether to make the trip to the South Pole, and he was concerned about the impact of sastrugi, S-A-S-T-R-U-G-I. Note, please, that I had to look up that word and found out that it means the wave-like ridges of hard snow formed by the wind. It's a Russian word. So he was concerned about the impact of sastrugi on his blindness. Pollock consulted with the explorer Pat Falvey, who had completed the journey 18 months previously. The trek cost Pollock approximately 250,000 euros. That's almost $300,000 in American dollars. His training included spending time in Norway to acclimatize himself to those sastrugi. Pollock, O'Donnell, and Solheim traveled 770 kilometers, averaging 14-hour journey time each day. All the while, they were lugging their almost 200-pound sleds behind them. He pulled the sled for at least 12 hours each day for a consecutive 43 days. Temperatures dropped as low as minus 58 degrees Fahrenheit during the expedition, with the team suffering from blisters, hunger, and extreme exhaustion. O'Donnell endured severe frostbite on one ear and his fingers, and Solheim, his teammate, lost a filling from his tooth due to the extreme temperatures. Pollock told the newspaper called the Irish Independent that they just can't believe they had arrived and that they only started to believe it was possible when they were 1 hour away, which was an amazing feeling. He described how they did not know what to do when they arrived, describing such a burst of energy, as he called it, that totally engulfed them. So Pollock returned to Ireland on the 3rd of February in 2009, where he was greeted at the Dublin airport, having been delayed by the extreme weather conditions which gripped Dublin that week. Later, he developed a writing career. Pollock wrote a book called Making It Happen to detail his struggle with blindness and his attempts to rebuild his life. This included running numerous marathons, establishing his own business, and becoming an international public speaker. He has some credits for television as well. On February 7th in 2009, just a few days after he returned to Ireland from the South Pole, he appeared on the RTE1 chat show. It's called Tubridy Tonight. Pollock hosted a documentary series called Yes, I Can. This aired in November of 2011 on Setanta Sports. Then we move forward to his paralysis. In July of 2010, Mark suffered a tragic fall from a second-story window. He broke his back and was left paralyzed. Mark is now living his own lessons, deciding how to overcome the second blow. A pioneer, he is exploring the frontiers of spinal cord injury recovery through an aggressive physical therapy and robotic technology. In 2015, he sued Enda and Madeline Cahill, his friends, and owners of the property he was staying at when he had his fall. He claimed that the Cahills had disregarded what he called a reasonably foreseeable risk of him being seriously injured, and that they should have made sure the window remained closed, or they should have at least warned Mr. Pollock that it was open. He said there was no justification whatsoever to neglect such a risk. The court found the couple liable, saying he was satisfied that the Cahills failed to discharge the common law duty of care they owed as occupiers. The open window was a real risk to Mr. Pollock, and they created that risk. Mr. Pollock's lawyers confirmed that he had limited his claim to a maximum of £2 million. That's the limit of the Cahill's household insurance, so the couple did not actually have to pay anything out themselves. Next, there's a section about Project Walk. Pollock has embarked on an ambitious experimental treatment in an effort to overcome his paralysis in cooperation with an innovative treatment center in California called Project Walk. He has accumulated some honors and awards along the way, in addition to the honorary degree awarded by Trinity College in Dublin that was mentioned above. Pollack has been awarded an honorary degree from Queen's University in Belfast and has been named a Young Global Leader. Mark also was awarded an honorary doctorate in 2015 by the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. In 2012, Pollack was honored with a Rehab People of the Year Award. Next, we'll be fast-forwarding a few years, and this article comes from a newspaper called the Irish Times. The headline reads, "Powerful TED Talk from Irish Spinal Cord Activists Simone George and Mark Pollack." The article was written by Deirdre Falvey. It was published in September of last fall. A TED Talk by an Irish couple, the explorer Mark Pollack and human rights lawyer Simone George, about using acceptance and hope to deal with grief, from this year's annual TED conference in Vancouver in April. The talk was released on Friday, September 7th, last fall. It was received more than 500,000 views. The blind adventurer athlete Pollack, who broke his back in 2010, and the lawyer and activist George, who started research on paralysis cures from his bedside, his hospital bed, spoke at the conference about how to resolve the tension between acceptance and hope. This was a task that they had to try and figure out after Mark's catastrophic spinal cord injury. They talk about why climbing into the raging river of grief, their terms, when tragedy strikes, can be the way to get to the next place, and how they are now catalyzing collaborations to cure paralysis in our lifetime. Only two Irish people have previously been invited to speak at the annual Maine TED conference in Vancouver. Bono spoke at the 2007 conference, and the mind magician Keith Barry spoke there in 2014. TED Talks, if you don't know, are promoted by a nonprofit which aims to spread ideas worldwide via short, powerful talks. They have to be 18 minutes or less in length. There are now many satellite TED conference events worldwide, but the annual conference, which began in 1984, is described as the heart of TED. At this five-day event, over 70 speakers gave 18-minute talks and shorter presentations. Seen as a leader in resilience, innovation, and collaboration, Mark Pollack has spoken at Davos, the World Economic Forum, Wired, and Founders, as well as the TED conference. He co-founded the global running movement called Run in the Dark, which will take place in 50 cities international this past November, raising money to fund the Mark Pollack Trust Fund. Mark Pollack describes how their TED contribution came about. This is a quote. "Chris Anderson, TED's curator, was in the audience at one of my talks in Switzerland. That night we met, and he spoke with Simone and I over dinner. A few weeks later, he invited us to speak about our shared resilience at TED 2018. TED can make the quest to cure paralysis truly global," he said. Talking about their presentation, Simone George says, "When Mark broke his back, I fell back on the personal toolkit I had at the time. Go all in. Research, learn as much as you can in a short period of time, and fiercely love every person around you that is trying to help you, and even more fiercely love those things who might get in the way. This is why I say in our TED Talk, science is love." Here's a quote, "Science is an act of creation fueled by the desire for human progress and care. There is no insurmountable reason why people should remain paralyzed after spinal cord injury." Simone George, a human rights lawyer and activist, as well as a consultant commercial litigator, described herself as a quote-unquote paralysis cure hunter. When Pollack broke his back, her research was the start of their work to find and connect people around the world to fast-track a cure for paralysis. Some 2,000 people attended the TED conference this year, and in the audience for Pollack and George's speech were environmentalist and former U.S. Vice President Al Gore, film director Steven Spielberg, actor and activist Tracy Ellis Ross, rock star Amanda Palmer, anti-bullying activist Monica Lewinsky, and social scientist Amy Cuddy. Cuddy, whose TED Talk about body language has had over 47 million views, described Pollock and George's talk as the most powerful, moving talk I have ever seen at TED. The TED curator, Helen Walters, described their talk as a love letter to science. Other speakers at that 2018 conference included SpaceX president Gwynne Shotwell, the founder and CEO of Netflix, Reed Hastings, and the CEO of Synovation, Kai-Fu Lee. That was about the TED conference in Vancouver. Next, we have another article. Guess what I discovered? They have guide dogs in Ireland, too. Here's a couple of them for you to meet. Holly and later Arrow. They both have helped a man named Donica, who now lives in Dublin. Information for this came from the Irish Guide Dogs for the Blind website. This is located in Cork on the southwest coast of Ireland. The website, if you're interested, is www.guidedogs.ie. Imagine you're a 10-year-old again and just an average kid. Do you love watching television, playing football with your friends, looking for tadpoles in the stream at the end of your road, climbing trees, all the usual stuff the kids do? Then something really unusual happens. You get sick, really sick. You're told by the doctors that you have a kind of cancer in your blood. They give you medicine that makes you feel even worse. Your hair falls out. You're tired all the time. Everything hurts. Then suddenly you go blind, and your whole world goes dark. Donica's whole world changed almost overnight when his battle with leukemia destroyed his optic nerves. No more television, no more football or tree climbing or sunsets or painting, no more searching for tadpoles in the stream down the road, just darkness. It's hard to imagine the terror that this 10-year-old boy must have felt, the sadness and the anger, the immense loneliness in this new, dark world. But these are things that Donica had to deal with at that tender age. It must have been very terrible. But talking to Donica today, you would hardly think so. Now he is age 26, and Donica is a very strong-willed, independent-minded, and incredibly optimistic person who lives his life the way he wants to live. Today, Donica has a fantastic job working in IT for Vodafone. He has 2 university degrees under his belt. He has moved from Cork to Dublin, where he lives totally independently. He goes out whenever he wants, and he goes where he chooses. To chat with him, you would hardly know he's blind. But he couldn't have achieved this degree of independence and confidence on his own. He couldn't have done it without his best friend and companion, named Holly, or without the help he's been receiving from the Irish Guide Dogs for the Blind, almost since the day he lost his sight. You see, we began working with Donica 10 years ago through our child mobility program. Our child mobility officer, Victoria Elliott, went to meet Donica in the hospital and began the critically important work that was needed to teach him how to live with being blind, how to use a long cane, how to get around, and also laying the groundwork that it would eventually lead to the day guide dog named Holly came into his life. For Donica, the early years adjusting to life without vision weren't actually the toughest. The hard part came later, as Donica recalls in this quote. I grew up in the middle of the countryside, so navigating wasn't a really big problem because I retained a lot of my memory of the various roads. When it really hit me was when I went to college in Cork City. Trying to navigate around a busy city and all the hustle and bustle goes with that was a real shock to my system. So cut off from the comfort of familiar surroundings and the support of a caring family for the first time in his life, Donica suddenly discovered the stark realities of being alone in Cork City as a young student of just 18 years old. We've all been there, taking our first steps out into the big wide world. You may well have watched your own children or grandchildren make the same journey. Yes, it is a time of excitement, but can you imagine making that journey in a world with no light, no color, nothing familiar to cling to? For Donica, the realization that he might not be able to cope hit home. Would he be able to continue his studies and gain the qualifications he needed to pursue his chosen career in IT? If not, what else could he do? Someone who's blind does not have the same range of opportunities as someone who can see. However, Donica is no quitter. In his mind, there was only one way to go, forward. Here's a quote. I had spoken with guide dog owners before and heard about the amazing independence owning a guide dog can bring. So I applied straight away, he said. Luckily, it wasn't too long before I got Holly, and I haven't looked back since. Over the next 7 years, Holly had a dramatic impact on Donica's life. Aside from keeping him safe on the streets of both Cork City and Dublin City, Holly has made everything Donica wanted to do with his life possible. Going to university to get his degrees, getting a job working in IT, going out socially with friends, meeting new people. In fact, thanks to his guide dog, Donica has even had the confidence to go out and join a football team, soccer. Though blind football Ireland, he is now back playing the game he loved so much as a little boy. In 2016, Donica trained with his second guide dog named Arrow, and they have gone from strength to strength. Donica enjoys his independence working in Dublin and representing Ireland in a range of sports. His guide dog, Errol, means the world to him. So next we have Isolde Carmody and her three guide dogs, all came from Irish Guide Dogs for the Blind. Their names are Quasi, Isaac, and Airy. Isolde Carmody is a writer, performer, and story archaeologist. I like that term, a story archaeologist. She was diagnosed with a retinal eye disease known as cone rod dystrophy during her preschool years. Isolde grew up surrounded by people that understood her circumstances, as her brother and mother have similar eye conditions. She said, "I was born with a vision impairment. I never really considered my condition in relation to disability or blindness until I went off to university, where I was registered as a student with disabilities. I began to learn to use Braille while at university and a white cane as a mobility aid, but I found it very difficult as I was beginning to have problems with pain in my wrists," she explained. "Also, as an independent young woman, I found that using a white stick made me feel insecure when walking around Dublin at night. So I began to consider a guide dog as a solution to both of these problems. I trained with my first guide dog, Quasi, in 2001, when I had just started my postgraduate studies. She gave me new freedom and confidence. When Quasi was nearing retirement age, Isolde was experiencing greater difficulty with her physical mobility. It was clear she required a guide dog to assist with her dual physical and vision impairment. In 2010, Irish Guide Dogs for the Blind trained Isolde with a dog named Isaac. This is the organization's first dually trained guide dog. He can do two things. Quasi, dog number one, was an incredible guide dog, but Isaac, dog number two, is truly remarkable. This is a quote. My quality of life is vastly improved with Isaac. As well as helping me when I'm out and about, he has made life at home very easy. He even helps me to do my own laundry. So with this vital support for Isolde, she should be allowed to continue to live an independent life. So how is St. Patrick's Day celebrated in Ireland? So here's the answer. This is by Jennifer Vernon from the National Geographic Kids News. Wearing shamrocks and the color green are only a few of the traditions observed on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. But not all of these traditions are traditional to the Irish. Bridget Haggerty, whose Irish family lived in England when she was a young girl, developed the website called Irish Culture and Customs to let people know about St. Patrick's Day and other Irish customs from an Irish point of view. Here's a quote. "There are a lot of things about the way we celebrate the day in America that used to be considered crazy by the Irish," said Haggerty, who now lives in Cincinnati, Ohio. "Americans are used to wearing a lot of green on St. Patrick's Day, for example, to avoid getting pinched. In Ireland, however, wearing too much green is considered to be bad luck. Why? According to Irish folklore, green was thought to be the favorite color of the good people, or fairies. The good people, it was said, would steal people, especially children, who wore too much green. One custom that is authentic is the use of shamrocks on St. Patrick's Day. People will wear a sprig of shamrock on their clothing, which the Irish call the wearing of the green. The Irish believe that St. Patrick used the shamrock, which has three leaves, to explain the Christian idea of the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. St. Patrick's Day celebrations in Ireland recently have become more similar to the ones held in the United States." Bridget Haggerty doesn't consider this change to be a bad thing, and she said, "If we can adapt the best from each other," she said, "the exchange of St. Patrick's Day customs," Haggerty hopes, "will lead the Americans and the Irish to a better understanding of each other. And that," said Haggerty, "is a good thing." Well, to end the day's program, I have a quote for you to think about. "If my Irish eyes are smiling, it means I'm up to some shenanigans." This is a very anonymous quote. No one would ever admit to saying that one. Happy St. Patrick's Day, and thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.